Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show.
We're broadcasting live from the land down under on the BBS Radio Network.
So happy to have you with us. Today we have a very special guest.
We have Dave Nechmanoff with us today, singer and songwriter, philosopher extraordinaire. I've seen him plenty of times. He tours with Al Stewart, who wrote Time Passages in the 70s and Year of the Cat. And Dave's a very good, excellent guitarist. He's played with many well-known rock stars and have seen many of his shows in New England. So got to know Dave a little bit from the shows and just very happy to have you with us today, Dave.
It's great to be here. I can't believe we're talking sort of halfway around the world to each other, right?
It's amazing technology. I love the World Wide Web.
You know, Dave, I do believe you're the first rock star we've had on our show, apart from Sasha Stone.
We've had Peter Jam. We've had a few people.
Oh, okay. I guess
so. But yeah, but Dave is, you know, Dave is dear to my heart because I've always loved Al's music and got to know Dave, and I like Dave. And he's a philosopher like myself and like you, so we're kindred spirits.
David raves about you and your music.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming.
Yeah, this is our first live interview.
Yeah, and people can actually see us in the flesh.
Live, Universal Soul Love, streaming live from Australia. How about that?
Technology has improved. Yeah, in a few years' time, it'll be holograms, but for now, video is the cutting edge of radio.
That's right.
And we believe Dave is here with his guitar. Show us your guitar, Dave. That just proves he's a muso.
That's his axe.
it's even got my name on it.
Oh, beautiful. Very nice.
This guitar got stolen and I got it back only because I had my name on it.
Oh, really?
The story goes with it, as with most things with me. Tend to be a lot of stories. So this guitar never travels. So that's the beauty of it, is that it's actually being seen by more people than usual because it doesn't go anywhere outside of here. So,
So where are you now? Are you in England?
No. I'm actually in California, Davis, California, where I live.
So I hear you. You tell us a little bit about your background experiences, but I think you're on tour right now. Or you're always on tour.
I'm sort of always on tour, but I'm back from a very long tour. I was out for about 2 months. Which is longer than I usually go. And I'm actually home right now, but then in a couple of days, I'm packing my bags again to head off to Texas for a couple of shows there. So it's sort of an endless tour, but I'm back from a very long, I don't usually go out for that long. I was over in England with Al Stewart and Ireland and Scotland and Wales.
Really?
And then I came back without Al Stewart to the East Coast of the United States. And I was out there for about another week and a half after the British part of the tour. And then I finally came home, which was good.
These tours go on for years and years. It's a never-ending circuit, isn't it, for you?
It is, more or less. Yeah, I'm usually out for maybe 3 to 6 days at a time, something like that, and then I come back. And then I'm home for a week and out again.
It's a very, very different lifestyle for musicians, isn't it? Can you tell us that the love of music and the love of traveling, does that go hand in hand? Or
not always. In fact, I'm not that much of a traveler. I mean, I've had the opportunity to travel quite a bit in my life, but really, given the choice, most of the time, if I can, I'll stay home because I don't spend nearly enough time at home as I'd like to. I like my town where I live, and you know, I like to see my family, and so actually, my preference is not so much to travel, but I love to play for new audiences, and that's the thing. If they could invent a system like on Star Trek where they could just beam me to the places and I could go home afterwards, I'd be pretty happy.
Mm-hmm. We need this technology.
We're not quite there yet. Yeah. This is the next best thing.
We're waiting for the Greys or the Pleiadians to come in with our teleportation technology, like they haven't, like they used to have in Star Trek.
That's
Till then, we've planes, trains, and automobiles, I guess.
So, songwriters are really the poets of our current age, aren't they?
Troubadours.
Yeah, my record label is called Troubadour Records because, basically we follow in quite an old tradition that's never really completely gone away.
Yes. The songs that I've heard you perform in, so the Al Stewart song, and I believe you have a new album out as well, which I have listened to, they're very deep.
Mm. Well, I don't like to be pretentious about it or anything like that, but I do like to try to write about something that actually has some substance as opposed to simply just sort of same old tropes that everybody's heard a million times. I mean, there's plenty to be said about relationships, and I don't knock people that write about relationships, but I think, you know, to say something new about relationships is not easy to do. And I think sometimes to write about other things besides relationships, which tend to be the main focus of pop music, to me, that's where it gets really interesting. And one of the things I love about Alistair's music is that he writes about history and a lot of things that go beyond just the she loves you, yeah, and right. You know, fairly simple tropes that everybody kind of can see coming from a mile away, you know, not the obvious things. So I like to try and do that. It doesn't necessarily have to be deep, but I think songwriting to be meaningful has to be universal at some level, you know, tying into the title of your show. I think it's really important that people can connect to the song. If they can't, there's not really much point. And at the same time, if you make everything so bland in general, there's no interest. Nobody's really going to get into it. So you have to write very specifically, I think, to make people interested in whatever it is you're writing about. And then that has to point the way to something larger that they can connect with, even if it's not part of their experience. I mean, Al writes about things like, you know, the Battle of Stalingrad, which most of us thankfully never had to experience, but we might have read about it. Unfortunately, a lot of people in this world have experienced other battles. They can relate to a lot of things in the song, even if that's not their particular experience. And that's kind of how I like to write. I like stories. I like to tell sort of fairly specific stories, but those stories can point to a larger truth or a larger reality that everybody can hopefully relate to.
I remember, I mean, I heard Year of the Cat, you know, in the 70s when it came out. I think it was playing on every station. You could, I think I read that in Al's bio. Turn the radio station and it would be playing on another station. But then, you know, you kind of, so many songs and you grow older and you lose track. And then one day I remember listening to the song and I heard the music, the accompaniment. And it has that, I call myself a mystic, you know, that's my, I studied mystic.
Yeah.
Year of the Cat has that sort of mystical a ring to it, and it was very catchy, and I started listening to the words, and I remembered the song, and it sort of, and I had almost, I could relate to it, even though I don't know what the song is about, and most people don't, and I don't know if Al's ever said what the song is about, there was something very deep about it, and it was something very
evocative.
Yeah, it just evoked some emotions in me, and it almost became like almost a theme song for me, and that's why I started seeing Al in concert in New England, and I started getting to know you a little bit and talking to you at the shows a bit. And so
I think, Dave, you're itching to play us a few songs.
I actually don't mind. I'm quite happy to just sit and talk.
Let's hear a little talk. But what would you like to play for us?
I don't mind. I can do something very local that points to sort of a larger theme. I could do a song about a particular person and a place here in Davis, California, where I live.
Is this from your album?
Yeah, we wanted to ask you about your new album, obviously, but
yeah, I mean, I could do something from the new album as well. Let's do something fun since the listeners
have played several songs.
Sure, I'm here to do whatever you like. So I'll just do the opening track from the new album because it's kind of fun, and since most of your listeners have never heard of me or heard me at all. It gives them a little snippet of what I do. This is called That Guy. He stands over 6'3", and that's in his stocking feet. Women turn to stare when he's just walking down the street. A modern day Adonis in a business suit and tie. Just not that guy. From the boardroom to the bedroom, he's the master of the deal. With eyes as cool as ice and nerves of tempered steel, he's got a taste for subterfuge. He'd make the perfect spy. But if that's who you are looking for,
when you've had a long hard day, someone to laugh with as you're growing older. Take a look at me, if only you can tear yourself away from that hole. Oh, he's a lover and a sportsman. He doesn't mind a ballroom brawl. And his girlfriends are like trophies he has hanging on the wall. If you get involved with him, he'll only make you cry. But if that's who you are looking for, I'm just not that guy.
That's just that's a fun pop song, nothing all that deep about it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think people can kind of relate to it. Of course, what your viewers don't know, since I'm sitting down right now, is my height is a lot closer to not even 5'3", rather than 6'3". So when I'm standing up and singing that song, most people can kind of get the joke a little faster.
I can relate to that. I'm 5'1", so
there you go.
Nice things come in small packages, but I love it.
No, yeah, you're right. But
it's very catchy.
Yeah, universal soul love is all about relationships. Actually, I don't think we talk about relationships enough on here, but I mean, that's at the basis of all things in life. So that's
fantastic. That song sounds like a celebration of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose in a roundabout way it is. It's
a roundabout, you know, yes.
Poking at this other guy and bemoaning the fact that I'm not this other guy, but at the same time, it's kind of defining myself by the negative space. So yeah.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. Very deep. What is the title of your new album?
Spinoza's Dream. Right. So the new album has two things that are a little unusual about it. One of them, which is probably not of interest to most people unless they happen to be Al Stewart fanatics, is that all the musicians on the album, except for myself, played with Al Stewart back in his heyday, back in the mid-70s. So most of them played on the Year of the Cat album. Some of them played on Time Passages and Modern Times. These are the musicians I grew up listening to. So, I mean, to me, that's just huge. Doesn't mean as much to everybody else necessarily, but that's really important to me. The other thing that's unusual about the album is that it's kind of a concept album. So every track on the album is connected in some way, either strong or weak, with a different philosopher. It happens to be Western philosophers, because I used to teach philosophy. I actually have a doctorate in philosophy.
And really?
Right.
Yeah, so I'm actually Dr. Dave. The
You're
department
an academic
that
as well.
Well, I'm a retired academic, yeah. I gave it all up to go back to being a troubadour. Started out as a troubadour and wound up there once again. But the thing about this album is that the songs all relate in some way. Each one relates to a different philosopher. So, for instance, that last song is one of the sort of weak philosophy relationships. You probably might not guess which philosopher that one relates to, but you want to take a guess? I'll give you a hint. German philosopher.
What, not Nietzsche?
Yes, very good.
Yes.
And can you guess how it connects to Nietzsche? I gave you a good clip. Any guess on how that connects to Nietzsche? It's pretty obscure. Well, if you remember,
you said that you were relating yourself to the negative. You are not the negativity.
Negative space.
But it's not so much about that. It's in Nietzsche talks about this concept of the Overman, the Übermensch, right, which is going to be this kind of superhuman. Right. And unfortunately, of course, the Nazis went on to take that and sort of distort it in their whole ideology. Yes. You know, which is not to say that Nietzsche himself was necessarily a Nazi, but they did take some of his ideas and kind of misapplied them. And the Übermensch was one of those that they took and kind of ran with. And so the guy in my song is kind of like a character of like the Übermensch, you know, the Superman. Mm. except he's not really so super. So
yes.
So it's got a little bit of a Nietzschean tinge to it.
Interesting. But in the end, it's the humanity, which I guess you're singing about your own humanity and about the traits that your average guy has, that perhaps the Uberman is in some ways a false image, and you know, usually idealistic, narcissistic, and you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
So just because I included Nietzsche as one of the philosophers on the album doesn't necessarily mean I agree with everything he said. So
sure.
But,
yeah,
that's philosophy.
Yes, exactly. So you asked about Spinoza's Dream, which is the title of the album, and it's actually the name of one of the songs too. And it's a song that I've been meaning to write for many years, because it has to do with Benedict Spinoza, who's probably my favorite philosopher. He actually was born with the name Baruch Spinoza, which is the Hebrew word for blessed. He was born in the Jewish community in Amsterdam in the 17th century. And when he was 23, he was excommunicated. He was kicked out of the Jewish community. So he changed his name to Benedict, which is also, of course, blessed, but just in Latin. He lived a fairly lonely life, made his living grinding lenses. The science of optics was kind of really booming in those days. They were inventing telescopes and microscopes and, you know, eyeglasses and all that sort of thing. And he was apparently pretty good at grinding lenses. Unfortunately, it killed him in the end, because the dust from the lenses got in his lungs. And so he died in his mid-40s, I think. But not before he left behind quite a bit of writing. And in one of his books, The Ethics, he actually tried to prove the existence of God as defined by Spinoza, rather unconventional definition, which is what got him in so much trouble, using geometric methods. So he has propositions, axioms, and theorems. And it's worth looking up. You can find translations of the Ethics. He wrote it in Latin, but you can find English translations or many other languages as well. So not only do I love Spinoza a lot, I've got not one, not two, but actually three Spinoza finger puppets. I keep one here in my studio, one in my guitar case, and one in my refrigerator. Yeah, I truly am crazy.
Would the Spinoza puppets want to say anything to us?
I don't know. Thank you for writing me a song.
Yeah. We were talking about the other night.
Yeah.
This you're on the perfect show. A lot of our listeners enjoy philosophy, so this is the Universal Soul Loves the right show for you. I think we reach over 200,000 people a month, I think, or more. I don't really know. Wow. You know, reportedly, it could be more than that with the affiliate networks and podcast downloads. I don't know. So
we're doing well. Yeah, I encourage all 200,000, go look up Spinoza if you haven't already.
Wow, that's very, very impressive. I never thought that you could prove the existence of God through geometry. Fascinating.
I think all philosophers spent their time, it's either proving the existence of God, the nature of reality, or the meaning of life. I mean, that's what I've spent a lot of time doing. And I don't consider myself an educated philosopher or anything. I spent a lot of time in metaphysics. But
right. Well, he was, in terms of metaphysics.
I think God is a triangular prism.
Spinoza's view of God is actually very, very akin to the view of a lot of scientists today, and also Einstein said that his favorite philosopher was Spinoza. So I think I'm in good company there, at least. But essentially, Spinoza was a monist. He believed that there really is only one thing, and we're all part of it. And that actually nature and God are really the same thing, and that basically spirit and body are the same thing too. They're just two different aspects of one thing, and we're all part of one thing.
One of the arguments has been there's either one source or two sources. There's either it's mono or it's dualistic. It's always been this idea of spirit in materialism.
Right, and Descartes, of course, was a dualist. Descartes came before Spinoza, and he was a dualist. And Spinoza, in a sense, was trying to make sense of Descartes' system, and one of the big problems he had was, well, if there's these two kinds of things, mind and body, how do they connect? And Descartes could never really explain how they interact if they're so different. And Spinoza, in answer,
supported for a lot of people, didn't he?
What's that? Descartes?
I think he supported for a lot of people with a dualistic notion, which, you know, of course, you know, ultimately, I believe that in non-dualism, and it's a very sort of artificial demarcation.
Well, it's true, but a lot of Western philosophy, going back to Plato, actually, is very dualistic. I mean, Descartes wasn't the first one to come up with that. But Spinoza, in a way, kind of is almost closer to Mahayana Buddhism, if you look at a lot of his metaphysics. Mm-hmm. So even though I don't think he had any awareness of Eastern philosophy, I once, you know, studied a bit of Buddhism, and I wrote a paper on the connection between Spinoza's view and Mahayana Buddhism, and they're actually not worlds apart. So,
Leonard and I were very interested in the study of consciousness and the exploration of consciousness. And I wrote a book several years ago called Illusion of the Body. And it was about, the basis of it was panpsychism, which is that all things have consciousness. So we're all one, you know, oneness of consciousness and one source. And that's my belief, you know, innate intelligence, universal intelligence. And many of our listeners follow that path as well. But, you know, it's just... Sure. Beliefs are beliefs, you know, so they're not facts. I mean, I'm an investigator. I believe you told me, you said once that your brother is a federal investigator.
He's a public defender. He's a federal public defender.
Yeah, I worked for a long time with public defenders, so.
So you know the world of that.
Yeah, I do. I know both sides. I remember you saying once in one of your concerts, you said you were a slacker, which I thought was kind of funny because your brother was a lawyer. And
well, yeah, actually he's a judge now. And, and the other brother's a filmmaker and screenwriter.
Right. That's right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So I'm kind of a slacker compared to them, but you know, we each have our paths. It's all right.
No judgment. I remember you said something else interesting once. You said something, you said folk singers are eternal optimists. I love that.
We have to be. I mean, if you're going to make your living as a folk singer, you've got to be very optimistic, because chances are the world is going to prove you wrong over and over again, but you just have to keep believing that it's all going to work out. And sometimes in the end it does. There's actually a song about that on the new album as well.
Well,
I thought since I've talked so much about Spinoza, maybe we should hear a song. Should we do the Spinoza Dream song?
It's okay.
Right. Then I'm not that guy. So this is another one from the new album. This is the title track, which is all about Benedict Spinoza. I had a dream, saw it was all the same, nature and God, two names for everything. But my words, they land in silence, like the snow on the canal. How many years until they hear me and understand dream I had, realize the oneness of it all. And in my dream, I saw the evidence of peace and tolerance in every heart. I wrote it down in geometric proof, try to share the truth with one and all. But my words, they land in silence, like the snow on the canal. How many years until they hear me and understand the dream I had, realize the oneness of it all. And so I wait and grind my lenses here to try to make things clear, and still I'm blessed, and still I'm blessed, and still I'm blessed.
Beautiful.
Wow, beautiful. I loved that.
Lovely. That's very, very peaceful, very touching song.
Thanks.
Great tribute to him.
Thanks. Yeah, well, I think he was overall a very peaceful sort of guy, and he just kind of wanted to quietly grind his lenses and you know, write his books and study nature and the world. So I think he does.
Yeah, and the song kind of the melody matches that. Oh, I say melody. Your song very it kind of gives that sense of peacefulness, and you know it's very dreamy, dreamlike. Yeah.
I don't know whether any songwriter has done an album before with each song dedicated to a different philosopher. This must be a world first.
Hopefully, too many anyway. I didn't find any after when I looked. Yeah, I mean Al did a called Past, Present, and Future. Al Stewart did a record called Past, Present, and Future, on which every track is historical and relates and was supposed to relate to a different decade of the 20th century. That's the one that's got Stravinsky and Roads to Moscow. In my opinion, possibly its greatest album. And so it's kind of my version of doing something like that.
Wonderful. So tell us, what other philosophers do you cover in the album?
Ah, well, we were talking about optimism. And one of the songs is sort of loosely inspired by Leibniz, another philosopher from a similar time period as Spinoza. He came sort of overlapped with him and just a little bit after. And he's famous or somewhat infamous for saying, among other things, that we live in the best of all possible worlds. Voltaire made fun of that in the play Candide. And I thought, well, there's kind of a modern day version of that, which is, it's all good. You know, people say, hey, it's all good. I catch myself saying it sometimes. So I wound up writing a whole song based around that phrase, it's all good. Connecting up to Leibniz. And the song wound up being sort of autobiographical, tracing my journey through the music business and out of the music business into academia and back out of academia and back into the music business once again.
Dave, version,
it's pretty fun.
You seem like an optimist.
He's always very fun, and he makes the show very lively. And Al's very funny, too. He's got a good sense of humor. You know,
I'd love to hear the optimist song.
Oh, right. Well, that's all good. I wish we had a way of playing it from the record, because the version on the record is really cool with Tim Rennick, who was Al's guitarist for many years, playing sort of blistering lead solo in the middle and, you know, backing vocals coming in and all kinds of cool stuff going on. But I'll just do an acoustic version of it if you like.
Stand all is good. all good. One more. All is good. It's all good.
Yay! I love nice. It. What a gem of a song. It's beautiful.
I'd love to get you here for a festival sometime in Australia.
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm. No, we've been trying to do that for a while, but we're getting closer.
That would be lovely. Yeah, that would be really great.
Well, one of the things I'm actually doing a lot more of now that I'd like to do even more of, and even on an international scale, I've been doing it more in the United States, but I'd be happy to do it anywhere else, is I've been doing a lot of fundraising concerts. And I really love trying to use my music to help other people and make things better out there. And unfortunately, I still have to feed my family, so I can't afford to just sort of fly around the world and just play for free all the time. But what we're doing is together concerts where we find sponsors, you know, corporations, companies, small businesses, individuals who want to do something good in the world, who will help to cover the cost of putting the concert together. And then we find an organization that's worthy, that needs help. And, you know, they can help spread the word, too, to the people that support them. We get a whole bunch of people together, and we create a community event that is bigger than anything that any of us could do alone. And that's, you know, that's something I really want to do a lot more of. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe we could put together some cool fundraiser concerts in New Zealand for
and
good things.
Well, we'd certainly love to help out. We're having the Paradigm Shift conference coming up, but it's a live webinar with Bruce Lipton and lots of other Andrew Lothar, Andrew Harvey, and quite a few other great transformational leaders.
Certainly, workshops can be spiced up with music. Yeah. Music is it really goes straight to the soul, doesn't it?
To music. But to put that out there, the Paradigm Shift conference is Tuesday, July 18th, and you can find that on Portal to Ascension. If you Google that, you'll see that. And Dave, we want to also give you the opportunity to give your website and some links so people can find your new Spinoza Stream, your new album.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm easy to find. The website is davenack.com, but it's spelled DAVENACH, like the first four letters of my last name, Nachmanoff. So DAVENACH.com. They can also find a lot of videos on YouTube with and without Al Stewart. And I've got a couple of Facebook pages, and they can find those pretty easily too. I was going to say there's a really lovely video for the Spinoza's Dream song that was shot partly in Wales, where the album was recorded, partly in Holland at a house where Spinoza lived, which is now a museum called the Spinoza House outside of Rheinberg. And so you can actually see the lens grinding equipment that I was talking about in the song, in the video and stuff. So check that out if you get the chance.
Beautiful.
We were trying to support someone who is trying to create something called the Global Freedom Fest concert. Mm. I'm not sure how he's doing with that. I haven't checked in, but it's supposed to be a worldwide
event. Yes.
You know, so.
Nothing like something like that, with music and speakers to bring people together and share ideas, brainstorm new ideas. Wonderful.
It's always been life-changing. And of course, on Universal Soul Love, we cover a lot of different subjects. We cover spirituality, personal growth, and all sorts of different, sometimes the supernatural. But we're also very interested in global issues. And certainly music is the universal language, I think, for conveying great life-changing, transformational information, sharing
and optimism.
Ideas.
Optimism is something we're very interested in, and something I'm a therapist, and I work with people who've got anxiety and depression and other issues. And optimism is certainly the universal healer. Really,
you have to have that in your
job. Really is, yes.
It
can seem hard, but it can actually be easy to switch lenses. And I'm really happy to hear there were some optimistic philosophers, that not all of them were depressed.
Right, we're not all Schopenhauer or something, the gloomy type, philosophy can be fun.
It is, yeah. It can be, you know, interestingly, what I found out about philosophers is that most of them were not well liked in their day. Even Jesus was actually a philosopher. I mean, he was a political antagonist. He was going up against the powers of the being. And they didn't like him. He was making them look bad in public about taxes and inciting the people. And I think that's why he got crucified and beaten and flogged. And you know, you can't make the rulers of your land look bad. They don't like it. And that's what a lot of philosophers were doing. They were just antagonists, challenging people's beliefs.
Well, some say that, you know, founder of Western philosophy was Socrates. And of course, he wound up having to drink hemlock for his trouble.
Socrates, right, is a prime example. Philosophers, even though we idealize them today, they were not well-liked in their day.
I'm not sure that we always idealize them today. I'm not sure everybody is so fond of philosophers. I think there are probably some politicians that would just as soon not have people thinking too much and, you know, digging too deep, you know.
I think we've had a few of them on Universal Soul Love that some people may not like, that are somewhat controversial, but they're basically activists, aren't they?
They are. And we think in Universal Soul Love, we're very much for freedom of speech and freedom of thought. And in our mind, that's the way out of this matrix that we're trapped in. We're trapped in a system that controls us from birth, and we think it's really important to have free thought. And
talking about free speech, I'm not talking about bad-mouthing people, and in a lot of, right. I'm not interested in that. I mean,
We're talking about thinking outside the box, and I think people need to do more and more of that, because there's so much in this world, so many paradigms that are really false paradigms, and it's really important, I think, to see the truth. And certainly in Buddhism, you refer to Buddhism, I'm very much from a Buddhist sort of background myself, and certainly the ability to break through illusions is a very important part of that philosophy.
The illusion of reality, that's right. And that has a lot to do with our program beliefs.
Tell me, do you have any songs on enlightenment by any chance?
Get a Buddhist hair.
Yeah, you have to, you know.
Or you think close to that.
Yeah, I have a song from a long time ago. I don't know if I can remember it all. It was very much Buddhist inspired. I haven't played it in a long time. I mean, like literally probably 30 years old. I mean, this is a song that goes back. It's called Laughter. I remember the chorus. I don't know if I remember the verses. It's just been so long. I can play the chorus, because that'll give you a taste of what it was like. The chorus. Everything's an apparition, perfect in its perfection. I mean, nothing to do with good or bad, acceptance or rejection. Never gonna find the truth, if that is what you're after. So you might as well just go ahead and break down in laughter. Find the right groove, turn up the music, and we'll both start to move. Speed down the highway, sneak through the alley, over the mountains, and down through the valleys. Everything's an apparition, perfect in its perfection. Nothing to do with good or bad, acceptance or rejection. Never gonna find the truth, if that is what you're after. You say, I might as well just go ahead and break down and laugh.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I wish I could remember the rest of it, but I got about one verse and a chorus, and that's about as much.
I love it. It's after 30 years, you have a great memory. Yeah.
How many?
You're possibly suggesting that laughter is the true meaning of life. I love it.
might well be. I don't know. Some of the things I've read by the Dalai Lama and stuff suggest that
it's really funny though. Absolutely. I've seen a lot of Buddhist monks in action, and one thing they have in common is they're always laughing. They've got this lightness, this ease, which is amazing. You know,
being a mental health doctor, would you say laughter is the best medicine?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I would.
Yeah, we certainly need it in these interesting times we're living in. Yeah.
Didn't you ask our guest last week, you might as well ask Dave Knack this question too.
What's that?
Didn't you ask our guest last week what the meaning of life is?
Oh, okay. Dave, I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
Listen up, Dave. Dave Nachmanoff, what is the meaning of life?
This is the second interview where they asked me this question. I guess that's the main thing. It might be 42.
Okay. All right. I've heard that one before. If you ask David, it's 23, but that's another story.
My number of synchronicity.
David sees the number 23 everywhere.
That's right.
Anywhere we go in the car, he sees car number plates with 23. It's just bizarre.
It's a number of synchronicity. It's just a sign for me. You know, I'm sort of connected to higher self and, you know, just kind of a 23.
Yeah, 23 is kind of my number as well. And so, yeah.
Oh, really?
That's funny. Yeah, that is strange. Now, I don't know. I mean, I think the problem with trying to ascertain the meaning of life is we being human, we don't really get to see, we only get to see part of it. So the meaning of life, I think we sort of have to take the meaning of life as, what is the meaning of life for us as humans, as human beings, as part of the greater whole? Because we don't know what the meaning of life is for an ant or for, you know, a celestial being or something. We only know what it's like for us as human beings. And so, you know, all I know about that is that we're sort of here for a relatively short time, and we get to interact with all these other beings and with each other, and the more we can show kindness and kind of tap into that larger sense of what's out there, then maybe we move things forward a little bit in the time that we have. And that's, you know, that as far as I can see, that's sort of the real meaning for us is to be just the best humans we can be. We don't have to be beyond human, because we can't be, but we just have to be the best humans we can be. And that means just trying to leave things maybe a little better than we found them, learn a little more, grow a little more, and not make things worse. Try to make things better.
Yeah. I like you.
That's not always easy. I guess the Buddhist monks would, you know, they'd walk around sometimes with slippers on their feet to keep from injuring any insects and things that they might accidentally walk on, just to try to do no harm. It's a very difficult thing.
That's true.
If we can just try to minimize the harm we do and make things a little better, so that the balance sheet at the end of the day comes out like, well, things are a little better than they would have been without us, then we've done what we're supposed to do. And, you know, we can do that in all kinds of ways, whether it's writing songs or having radio shows or you know, building great structures, or, you know, anything, teaching people, whatever it is that we do, healing people.
I think that's a great philosophy of life. I agree with you 100%. I think that life may not have any meaning. We create meaning is what I should say, but all other things like snakes, they have their own meaning that we may not know very well. And we tend to put our own meaning to snakes and ants and everything that we perceive outside of ourselves. So we're sort of creating meaning.
Statement that I have heard said about humans is that we are meaning making machines. I don't know that I like the machine part, but I do like the meaning making part. And I remember attending this workshop where we actually left us all feeling quite profound at the end of the workshop. There was that sense of, well, what we realized was that possibly life has no inherent meaning. And I remember arguing with the leader of this workshop, saying, of course there's meaning. And, you know, by the end of the workshop, I got it, that there might actually not be an inherent meaning. But the beauty of that is the slate is clean, and in that neutral space, we can actually put whatever meaning we want to in our lives. And that was truly quite significant.
Yeah.
And I guess the other thing that you talked about in terms of connecting with the greater whole, that sense of connection might in itself be meaningful, you know, that's being able to be more than just ourselves and see the big picture. That's deep. That's, you know, that gives a certain sense of, I guess, importance to our lives.
Yeah, I think most people connect to either a traditional organized religion or outside of that to some sort of sense of spirituality, where they find, you know, some connection to either God or gods or something larger than themselves. For a lot of them, that really imbues their life with meaning that it wouldn't otherwise have. And I guess, and I don't see anything wrong with that at all. I think that's fine. I think it's also possible to be a humanist, an agnostic or atheist, and find plenty of meaning just within the human experience alone, without necessarily seeking it in some transcendent way. Mm-hmm. And that's okay too, because there's certainly a lot of room for making things better and understanding things better within the human sphere.
Absolutely.
To reach beyond that, I think it's
but being able to be not just optimistic, but being able to actually find your own passion, find your own meaning, that might actually be the meaning of life. The meaning of life is to find meaning.
To find your purpose, and it doesn't your
matter,
higher calling.
Doesn't matter what it is, but as long as you do have that.
Right. Mm. Yeah, and I think that's part of the hard thing for a lot of people in the world today, is that they don't feel like they have that. They get up and they go to a job that isn't necessarily something they care about or like, and they spend most of their time doing things they feel they sort of have to do for other people or just to survive, and none of it means anything to them beyond just bare survival, and they feel hollow and empty, and they're struggling for something else. So when we feel hollow, we fill that space with other things, often food or drugs or alcohol or whatever, and unfortunately that leads to a lot of pain and misery in the world as it is. But if people can find some sense of meaning and purpose for themselves, they often don't feel as like they need to fill that emptiness, because they don't have that emptiness. So it's worthwhile, but it's hard. I mean, a lot of people just are struck with the bare reality of not having enough to eat and a roof over their heads. And when you're in that situation, you can't be faulted for just having to focus on the bare necessities and getting what you need to survive. And it's a shame that in the world that has so many resources and so much, that we don't have a way of
I
think that technology actually does exist, and we just need to keep pushing towards it. And it's interesting that you mentioned needs, because in my first book, something came to me, and I guess it may have come from my higher consciousness or something, some higher source. And there was a strong focus on Maslow and the hierarchy of needs pyramid.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it was thought that if you can't meet your basic needs, it's going to be very difficult to connect with your higher source and spirituality and self-actualization, to become self-actualized and move into those higher spheres and to really feel safe and secure in the world, I think.
Mind you, just to be the devil's advocate a little bit, it's interesting that third world countries where there is starvation and they don't have all the luxuries of life, they seem to have in some ways, not necessarily discovering their own passion, but they've got much more of a sense of community, community spirit. And a lot of those children in third world countries, you see laughing at the cameras and, really, being happy with life and just being being happy for the bare necessities. And in some ways, I think those people may have a sense of meaning and connection that we might have lost along the way.
Yeah, because they don't question maybe the framework and community that they're in, and they feel secure within that. Don't know. But there are a lot of counterexamples. I mean, the Mother Teresa's of the world might live voluntarily with almost nothing, but they're very spiritual and they have a lot of meaning in what they do, even without.
It's pretty complex. I guess we've only got about a minute and a half left on the show, unfortunately. I wanted to ask you more about your background and experiences, but we had a great show with you today.
I really enjoyed the songs and the philosophy and the
It's fantastic.
But I guess I'll have to hear that another time.
If you want to just give us your website one more time for our audience.
It's davenach.com, DAVENACH.
All right. And I'd love to have Al Stewart. I might as well put this out here. We'd love to have Al on the show at some point to talk about the global issues, because we deal with that a lot on Universal Soul Love. And we'd love to hear his views on politics, current day politics and history and what's going on at some point. But anyhow, we had a
fit. I'll mention it to him.
Okay.
But look, we'd love to have you on the show again. There's so many songs I'd love to hear.
Yeah.
We
had a great time.
When you have your new album out, which you're probably quirking on already.
Yeah, he's
on tour, Dave on the road. Right.
Okay.
But great having you on Universal Soul Love and being our special guest today. Had a great time.
So we hope we've made your morning or evening meaningful.
Yep. Evening.
Absolutely.
California.
Great to talk to you
both. Lovely. Thanks, Dave.
Bye-bye. Okay, this is Dr. Lana Love.
And Detective David Love.
From Universal Soul Love. Thank you for being on our show. Join us next week. Bye for now.
Bye for now.